Welcome. I'm Ethan Elkind, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. Later in the show, we're going to talk about the U.S.'s efforts to dominate Greenland, including Trump's announcement last month that he could use military force to invade and occupy the country. But first, last year, the New York Times and the Fuller Project revealed that household name companies like Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, and Unilever, as well as local politicians, have been profiting off of India's massive sugarcane industry, which forces children to work, pushes them into underage marriages, and coerces women to get unnecessary hysterectomies to keep them working in the fields. The investigation details how, instead of receiving wages, laborers work to pay off advances from their employers, an arrangement that requires them to pay a fee even for the privilege of missing work just to see a doctor. So to discuss the investigation, we're so pleased to be joined by Megha Rajagopalan. She is an investigative reporter at the New York Times based in London. In 2021, she and her colleagues received the Pulitzer Prize in International Reporting for a series of stories on the Chinese government's mass detention and incarceration of Muslim minorities. Thank you so much for joining us, Megha.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So, Megha, the investigation that you and your colleagues first published last March delved deep into the exploitation of these workers, now specifically women who are toiling in these sugarcane farms and mills, as well as the inhuman working conditions that they're suffering under on a daily basis. And you've written a number of follow-up stories. It's really rare to see this kind of reporting where journalists can keep the story alive and follow up. And I wanted to begin by asking you how you learned about the labor practices in this industry in the first place?
Oh, it's a really good question. I had been talking to one of the editors at the Fuller Project who we worked with about this issue for a while. There had been some local news reports about these labor abuses, and some of them specifically mentioned that there were women who were working in these sugarcane fields in Western India that were being coerced to get hysterectomies even when they didn't need them. And I know, like, obviously sugar and other agricultural work is absolutely rife with labor abuses. But when I saw the part about hysterectomies, I was like, whoa, that's something that I really didn't expect. And something that sounds like just uniquely terrible. So it kind of sparked our curiosity to go and investigate further and sort of question like how this system came to be and also who's benefiting from it and who's keeping it going.
It's really a remarkable story and amazing that you were able to follow up on it in such an in-depth way. Can you talk about how you reported on it? I know you've traveled pretty extensively across some of these areas in India where the sugarcane industry is based. Can you talk about your reporting efforts and the travel that you took to uncover the story?
Yeah, sure. So our reporting was focused on a state called Maharashtra. It's in Western India, and it's the same part of India that where all the Bollywood stars and like all, some of the richest people in the country come from. But if you drive sort of 10 hours west to some of the more rural areas, you come to some of the most kind of impoverished villages that you can find in the country. So my reporting partner, Kadri Inzamam, and I, we sort of traded off and took turns. I visited primarily during the off season when the laborers migrate to their home villages, like outside of the sugar season. We wanted to do that because they would be sort of less busy with work because they work really all day and all night during the sugar harvest season. So we went to the region and we just drove from like village to village, interviewing women who wanted to talk to us about some of their experiences, particularly around labor abuses and also these hysterectomies and the curtailment of their reproductive rights. So it was a really kind of difficult time to travel. You know, a lot of these villages are very remote. We had to go on foot or by motorbike a lot of times. But we wanted to interview just as many women as possible to sort of get a complete idea of what the situation really looks like for laborers. And, we went beyond that. We wanted to talk to some of the middlemen who recruit the workers. We talked to officials at sugar mills as well to talk about how the system was put into place. And we were surprised to find out that executives at sugar mills pretty much, cop to everything. They knew how the system works and they were aware of a lot of these abuses. uses. And we were able to connect some of those mills to household name companies, companies like Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, Unilever, Nestle, and others.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to follow up with you about, the companies that are buying this sugar. Can you talk about just the nature of this industry, where that sugar ends up, and how it's really ending up in the beverages of what a lot of people here in the United States are drinking?
Yeah, so India is a huge sugar producer. It's number two in the world. It has been number one on occasion, with Brazil being the other big one. And because of that, there are a lot of major companies that source in India, especially this part of India and Maharashtra. So when we went in, we were really looking to see, like, you know, who's buying all of this sugarcane. And we found that there are a lot of, like, major listed companies that are buying it, including Coke and Pepsi. And, you know, one of the reasons that they buy it is because it's just such a major provider of sugar. And a lot of these companies, they have, actually almost all of them have their own codes of conduct for how their suppliers should act. You know, they say that they don't want forced labor in their supply chain. They say that they don't want labor abuses, and they will even send inspectors to sugar mills to sort of ensure that those things aren't happening. But what we found is that the companies by and large have completely missed it. And, you know, Coca-Cola was actually criticized on kind of a separate but related issue a few years ago. And in 2019, they even published their own report that was carried out. Like, they paid for this report to be carried out by a consulting firm that, you know, very clearly delineated a lot of abuses that were happening to workers in sugarcane fields in this exact same part of India. And in response, the company basically did nothing. So we ended up, you know, we really wanted to connect, like, every single dot in that supply chain. We wanted to look at the exact factories that the companies were sourcing from, and we wanted to look at the farms that those factories bought from in order to, you know, to see exactly what was going on in these company supply chains, which is a thing that a lot of the companies say is actually too difficult to do.
We're speaking with New York Times investigative reporter Megha Rajagopalan about her investigation into abuses in India's sugarcane industry. And Megha, can you paint a picture of how these abuses happen? What is the nature of the laborer's position at these sugarcane fields? How does this abuse get carried out? Can you give us more details?
Yeah. So at the heart of the issue is an idea that actually would be familiar to a lot of Americans, which is basically the recruitment system for the laborers. So the laborers are, it's almost like being, like, you know, like an Uber driver or somebody who isn't necessarily formally employed by the company. So essentially what happens is that the sugar mills use a middleman to recruit the laborers. And the reason that they do that is because they don't want to pay minimum wage. They don't want to pay for any benefits, even things like running water or to have toilets or, like, any kind of, like, sanitation, any kind of access to healthcare. They don't want to provide any of that. So they just tell the middleman, hey, you're the one who's hiring the workers. And if the standards that you use go against Indian law, then let that be on your head. So that's sort of the system that has recruited so many workers, you know, in ways that ends up doing great harm to them. And some of the things that workers go through really, really surprised me. You know, in addition to this issue with the hysterectomies, basically the workers, like, because they are oftentimes are not literate, they're doing this based on oral contracts. So the middlemen have complete control over whether they get paid and how they get paid. And they essentially sort of force them to keep coming back year after year by telling them they still owe some debt. That's a really big issue. We also found that there are often children and underage people that are working in the fields. Pretty much every single woman that we interviewed said that she started work in the sugarcane fields when she was either a teenager or even younger than that. Almost all of them came from families that also cut sugarcane. So there's a kind of, like, generational issue here. And I think One of the questions that we got the most after our first project came out is, if these conditions are so bad, you know, why don't people just leave? And the answer to that is really complex, and I can get into that more. But I mean, one of the reasons is that they're just trapped. They're sort of kept in these jobs by this debt that keeps rolling over and rolling over. A lot of the women.
It's like indentured servitude, right? Like they're paid in advance and then they have to stick in the job. Is that right?
Exactly.
And you talked about hysterectomies too. Let's go into that. Why are they getting hysterectomies? Why is that necessary for them to stay on the job?
Yeah. So the answer is a little bit complicated. So like when I first started the story, I was like really curious about this. Like, what do hysterectomies have to do with cutting sugarcane? And what we found is that basically the root of the problem is that these women are living in these conditions that are really terrible for your gynecological health. Like they don't have bathrooms. They don't have access to sanitary products like pads, tampons, all of that stuff. They just can't, like, they can't afford them, and there's nowhere to buy them anyway. And there's also nowhere to throw them away. So a lot of times these women don't want to continue menstruating. They also, you know, once they've had children, which they do at a very young age because of child marriage, they think, you know, what do I really need my uterus for anymore? Not understanding that getting a hysterectomy before the age of 35 or before the age of 40 can be really, really devastating for your health. So what ends up happening is that there are like doctors who are sort of predatory. They tell these women, you know, get this so you can go back and work in the fields, that you can continue working, continue providing for your family, get this surgery. Now, hysterectomy is a surgery that you could get for free or very low cost under India's public health care system. But because this is a very remote area, these women often go to private clinics. And so to go to these clinics, they need to borrow money. And what we found is a lot of times the person that they are borrowing money from is the contractor that works for the sugar mill. So what that means is they get the surgery and then they have to pay back that debt again to the sugar mill, and they have to go back and continue working. And we found that families are working for like 3, 4, 5 years just to pay off the debt from the surgery that these women didn't even need, which is a really devastating thing. And a lot of women told us they deeply regretted having the surgery, but when they went in, they believed that if they did it, it would help them stay at work, keep going back to work, and that they wouldn't have to deal with menstruating in the fields anymore.
It's just almost hard to comprehend these kinds of conditions. And just to even paint a picture of what it's like to work in the sugarcane fields, I know since you've traveled in this area, talked to these laborers, can you just describe what a day in the life is like in these sugarcane fields?
Yeah, I mean, I really wanted to understand it better. So we spent a lot of time. We sort of, you know, took trips with some of these women. I even cut some sugarcane myself just to see. It's a really, really grueling day, as you might imagine. I think particularly for women, because they do a lot of the household labor as well. So basically in the fields, these women are generally migrant workers. So they have these kind of makeshift dwellings. Like basically it's like a tarp and a wooden stake. So some of that stuff they will like even buy from the sugar mill. So they'll get up really early to build a fire, to cook the morning tea. They'll do childcare. They'll do laundry, you know, by hand in a bucket with water that they may have brought with them or brought from a nearby well. And then they'll sort of start the day. And generally the way sugarcane cutting works is that it's done in, you know, husband and wife teams. So the husband will, use a sickle to cut down the sugarcane, and the wife will basically strip the leaves off and tie it in a bundle and get it ready to be put on a truck to go to the sugar mill later. It's really difficult work because this is a really, really, I mean, it's a desert climate. It's a very, very hot place to work. And I think one of the women that we interviewed, she started this work when she was a kid, and she told me this detail that just stuck with me, which is that when you start doing it, the leaves on the cane are so sharp that they just cut into your palms like over and over and over. And that was the thing she sort of hated the most, you know, more than even the labor of it. So they do that for basically for the rest of the day. The women then prepare dinner. They they finish any sort of like household chores. And they're like, for all of the workers, the day only ends pretty late at night when the trucks from the sugar mills come and everyone works to load the cane onto the trucks, and then they rise again at dawn. And they do this basically for 6 months out of the year, which is the length of the sugarcane harvest season.
And then what do they do the other 6 months?
I mean, so a lot of them will do other kinds of agricultural work that isn't as, you know, basically is not enough for them to make a living on. So they'll pick things like cotton, millet, other kinds of crops. And then others like will have trouble finding work as well.
I can imagine. Well, you're listening to Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Ethan Elkind sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and we're speaking with Megha Rajagopalan. She is an investigative reporter at the New York Times based in London, and also leading the investigation by the New York Times and the Fuller Project to reveal how household name companies like Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, Unilever, and local politicians have been profiting off of India's massive sugarcane industry. And we want to open the phone lines and see if anyone of you has questions for Megha or has been to India, has thoughts about the sugarcane industry in general. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also send us an email to yourcall@kalw.org. Well, Megha, we've talked about how the system is really propped up by this sort of indentured servitude, this debt bondage. And you've talked about how the companies themselves have been denying this in their reporting. And some of the multinational companies that are buying the sugar deny any of this kind of debt bondage. How do you reconcile that discrepancy with what you're finding on the ground and what these companies are saying?
Well, so we sort of started reporting. We started reporting 2 years ago, and we published our first piece in March of last year. And before we publish anything, we'll go to all of the companies that we name in the story, and we'll ask for their responses. And the responses that we got from companies at that time, like companies like Coke and Pepsi, were basically, I mean, didn't really say one thing or the other. You know, they sort of said, well, we're going to look into this, but that's basically it, which I thought was really unsatisfactory, especially considering Coke had commissioned a report 5 years before that, where they specifically mentioned that debt bondage was found in their supply chain, specifically in sugarcane farms. But in the months since that happened, we've sort of kept pressing and kept following up and sort of kept going back to these companies to see if they intended on really changing anything. And I guess to my surprise, in December, Coke told us that they were sort of taking some initial kind of small steps in order to sort of pressure the mills that they source from to adopt better labor standards. So that includes things like training factory middlemen about wage transparency and, you know, training them to give sort of fair wages and to try to formalize contracts with some of those agricultural workers. And, you know, sort of encouraging some of these mills to provide things like basic sanitation. So that's a really small step. And it's not a thing that's going to solve the whole problem. But I thought it was kind of positive that they were at least doing that. And I will say some of the other companies that we talked to, they have, you know, there's one instance where there was a company that severed ties with one of the mills that we pointed to that was using abusive practices. There are others that have said that they are pulling back from the region. I think that most of the workers' rights advocates that we talked to said that the best thing for companies to do is actually to engage with their suppliers and encourage their suppliers, push their suppliers, better yet, require their suppliers to use better practices rather than kind of cut ties altogether. So we're still sort of following, you know, some of the impacts from our work and what companies are doing.
Well, not only the companies taking responsibility, but what about local authorities? I mean, this should be illegal. You've documented how when workers are trying to quit these jobs, some of them have been threatened, beaten, abducted in retaliation. In at least one case, a laborer was killed. Some of them have said they've been held captive within the sugar mills themselves. So what about local enforcement? What are the elected officials, you know, the law enforcement in India doing about this?
Yeah, so I wondered that too when I started this project. And I think one of the things that we found, which we published in the middle of last year, is that the reason that politicians have done so little about this over the years is that they're basically in bed with the sugar industry. This is a huge industry in the state of Maharashtra. And we found that politicians, you know, across all four major political parties are the exact same people that control the sugar mills in the state, which means that there's a real conflict of interest there. If you control the industry, why would you want to regulate it, right? So this is a really big problem, and it's something that labor activists point to a lot. There is one kind of bright spot there, which is the top court in the state, the Bombay High Court, basically chose sort of its own volition to take up this issue of how laborers are treated. The court commissioned this team to go out into the field and do a study, and that team essentially found like most of the same stuff that we found. So there is definitely a growing awareness. The court also demanded responses from more than a dozen different state government agencies. So it's definitely an issue that is developing more prominence within the state.
And Megha, you've talked a bit about how the companies like Coca-Cola are responding. What else is being done to pressure the companies, the buyers of this sugar, to clean up their supply chain and ensure that they're not supporting businesses that are exploiting labor like this?
Well, one thing I didn't expect that has happened is that there's been a kind of revolt by a certain group of investors. Now, some of these investors are like institutional investors that, they have at the core of their mission, like social justice and other things like that. But some of the other ones are like really mainstream institutional investors. So for one is the New York City Comptroller, which oversees hundreds of billions of dollars in pension investments, has said that they're starting a pressure campaign, against some of these companies to stop using these practices. We also found that, the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth Fund, which is the biggest fund in the world, like I cannot emphasize how big this fund is. They manage, I think, $1.8 trillion in assets. Their ethics arm has launched an investigation into one of the companies tied to the sugar industry in Maharashtra, basically to see whether the fund should pull back its investment or not. So that's something that could really make a serious change. We also found that the State Department, like the U.S. State Department, has really taken up this issue, and they have been in conversations with elected officials and industry leaders within India to try to push them to make positive changes to labor rights. And they really see this issue as something that's really serious and needs to have action taken.
Yeah, I was going to ask if there's policy action, or what can individuals do? I mean, many of us are purchasing some of these products. How do we even know where that sugarcane is being sourced? What do you say to people who just want to get more involved and try to fix this situation?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that these companies respond to, basically like bad PR. Like, when we started putting these articles out, the companies definitely took notice of them. And I think if we hadn't published anything, I don't think the companies would have done anything different, even though some of these labor abuses were kind of an open secret within the state. And the companies themselves say that, they have a responsibility to know what happened. So I guess for people that are buying the products, like, I mean, everyone uses social media now, like everyone has a platform. That's a great place to, either share our work or share other work with relevance to this, or say your own opinion. I mean, I think those are really effective things to do. Obviously, voting with your wallet is always something that is an option to us as consumers. I think those are kind of the big things. And then I would also say, in the EU, they have recently passed legislation that is much stronger than anything that exists in the US, that basically forces all companies sort of above a certain threshold, like all like kind of large companies that operate in the EU, to follow certain standards when it comes to labor and environmental abuses in their supply chains. It's a really strong law, and it's something that when it's actually implemented will push a lot of companies to think more seriously about documenting abuses within their supply chains, so they aren't, they aren't liable. And I think a law like that in the US would be, I mean, there's never really been one, and it would be really interesting to see if there ever is one in the future.
Yeah, well, we'll really hold our breath, I suppose, with this new administration coming in, unfortunately, but you never know. And it's great to see that there are some bright spots and some potential reforms. It's got to be gratifying for you to have really helped spur some of this by shining a light through your role at the New York Times on what's happening in India. And just briefly, as we just conclude this segment here, what's next for you with your reporting?
I think we're still following the story to some extent. I mean, I think we, like, I'm not sure if I'll take another trip to India for this, but we're definitely, I think one of the big threads that we're following is kind of like, what's the impact of our work? You know, what are companies going to continue to do? Like, what is this investor pressure campaign going to become? And also whether there's policy change on the ground. And as for me personally, I focus a lot on some of these issues around human rights, around labor abuses, and supply chains, and I plan to continue doing that this year.
All right. Well, Megha Rajagopalan, investigative reporter at the New York Times based in London, thank you so much for your work uncovering the story, documenting it really for the world, and also for coming on Your Calls One Planet series. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Well, coming up next, we're going to be talking about the geopolitical significance of Greenland and what the United States, and specifically newly inaugurated President Trump, has been talking about and doing to try to assert more control and dominance over that region. So stay with us on Your Calls One Planet series. We'll be back after this short break.